Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for our 2025 season review of the Inside Linebackers. This will be the third in the series now, so hopefully by now you've listened to the defensive line show already, and one other that I'm forgetting exactly which it was. The offensive tackle show should already have been out already by now. But join me for the Inside Linebackers today is Connor Brooks. Connor, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Still trying to get over that Steelers loss, but other than that, you know, I'm excited and also a little anxious about the coaching search.
Yeah, it's obviously that's kind of hanging like a shadow over everything. It's amazing how quickly this thing has progressed, because literally tomorrow is my regular day on the radio. And when I left the station at 8:30 last week, we didn't know Harbaugh was gone. And now not only do we know Harbaugh is gone, we kind of know a lot of the reasons behind it. We've got a whole list of candidates they've already talked to. So things have moved very quickly, to say the least, in these last 6 days now. It's incredible that it's been that frequent. Do you have a favorite among the group?
You know, I think Mentor would probably be my guy that I would hire. You know, I hear Flores a lot. I think Flores is like a fan favorite, but I'm not sold on him. Just because some of the culture things I thought that I saw about the Dolphins, but I think Mentor would be the guy if I had to guess right now.
Okay. I think the betting money is certainly going with you. I kind of like Anthony Weaver as a CEO head coach.
Love Weaver.
I won't be unhappy with Mentor at all. And I do think a lot of people say you really want a guy on one side of the ball. I don't really have a strong feeling on that. I think there are pluses and minuses to each side, but I think the CEO coach puts you in a position where you don't have to fire your head coach because one side of the ball isn't producing.
Yeah, I also think it's fascinating that a lot of the guys that we're interviewing have been under the Harbaugh tree. And so, you know, you fire Harbaugh just to go get a guy that was kind of under his tree. And so that's it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it is a little weird. Obviously, there was some uprooting that occurred, and it's going to be a complete changing of house. But you're right. I mean, there's a good chance that they're going to go to somebody who has at least Harbaugh connections or Harbaugh roots.
Yeah.
All right, let's get back to it. Talk about the inside linebackers here. As always, we'll start with Roquan Smith, who's been the guy for the Ravens at inside linebacker these last four seasons now. He did miss 2.5 games. They're all early in the year. Kansas City missed, you know, a portion of the game, had to leave. Houston and the LA Rams, he missed. They came back and he played all the games. But a lot of people are talking about regression from Roquan Smith this year. And I would say he probably took a small step back, but I'd like to hear your thoughts on the matter too before I pontificate more on that.
Yeah, I heard the same talk. I do think he probably took a step back. I just wonder how much that had to do with the injury too. I mean, the injury came pretty early in the season, and you know, you never know how hampered a guy is from, especially from a hamstring injury. And so, you know, he was playing pretty well before he got injured. I know he had a rough game against the Bills, but he played really good against the Browns that second game of the season. Like, he was outstanding.
Yeah.
And so he looked like the all pro self, and then the hamstring happened and he just wasn't ever exactly the same, but I didn't really see major regression in my opinion. Now, was he the all pro level, you know, first team all pro guy? I don't think so, but I still think he was a very good inside linebacker.
Yeah, I mean, he did make the Pro Bowl again. So we'll talk some specifically about Roquan. I want to go to some high-level themes first. I kind of jumped the gun a little bit there. But one of the other general themes was the weak side linebacker versus dime usage and when they had a healthy Will and not. So they were through a lot of changes in terms of having Buchanan both at the mic and at the Will spot. And wearing the green dot was Roquan's job. But later in the season, when they had Buchanan replaced by Simpson, then Simpson was actually out of there more quickly on second down and medium, like second down 6 to 9 yards, I'll call it. They converted to the dime, and it was like a early use of the dime, I'll call it. It's pretty clear that they still don't trust Simpson, relatively speaking, as a coverage asset to Buchanan.
Yeah, and you know, it's not surprising. And I didn't think that he got any better in coverage this year. I don't know about worse, but I didn't feel like he got any better. as a coverage linebacker this year. And plus, the Ravens have invested so heavily into defensive backs that I'm sure that was part of the usage as well.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, they used him in a variety of ways we'll get to specifically for Simpson, but Simpson did probably turned in the best coverage statistics of the group, which is a little odd. And then you look at usage and you say, oh, okay, now I understand. But we'll talk about that a little bit later. 2025, at this same time we were having this discussion, this was a very different set of circumstances. Simpson has just lost his job in a set of stages over the 2024 season. So basically, to review with people, he was anointed the starting weak side linebacker at the beginning of 2024, essentially on the strength of a final game versus Pittsburgh in 23. Basically didn't get on the field as a rookie. So anyway, started the year as the weak side linebacker, didn't play particularly well, lost his role in stages. At first, they were a committed nickel team, or moved out of that to usage of dime starting about the third week or something. It was fairly early in the season. And then they used a lot of Hamilton in that dime spot. And then beyond that, they moved on then and had a combination of Harrison and Board take his snaps on a rotational basis. And then Harrison and Board just completely took over for him. And the weird thing about rotational play at inside linebacker is it almost always means there's a competition going on as opposed to something that's being done by, you know, down and distance or package based changes. When it's one series at a time, that does not say good things about the incumbent.
No, and it's the second year in a row now that he's gotten replaced midseason. And so that kind of tells you what they think about Trenton Simpson just as a player overall.
Meaning 24 and 25, you're saying?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. All right. So in 25, I guess I don't see it as he got replaced because he played early in the year when Roquan was hurt. And then after the thing, he wasn't really playing much except in dime packages. And that's, you know, you see six or seven snaps a game for him for that long period. And then he came back in when Buchanan got hurt.
Yeah. Did you not feel like Buchanan kind of replaced him or not replaced, but definitely took a larger load than Simpson later in the season?
I'd have to think back because I think let me actually just take an actual look here because then I won't trip over my own words in some way that will make me feel stupid later. So
yeah, because the way I remembered it was Buchanan started to get a lot more weak side linebacker spots later in the year. And so it felt like Trenton was starting to get phased out again before Buchanan got hurt.
Okay. So maybe you could say this: against Buffalo, Simpson played 26 snaps. Against Cleveland, he played another 15. Then against Kansas City, it looked by then, whatever had been done in terms of roster switching had already been done. He played 37 snaps, which is about what they still played on defense after Roquan was hurt. So basically Buchanan was sliding over. He was taking the spot. And then against Houston, LA, he played the full game, but that's, mm-hmm. you know, Roquan didn't play those games.
Yeah.
Then between week 8 and week 14, he plays between 10 and 2 snaps every week. And those are a lot of in as a spy, in as a third mm-hmm. down dime player. So no change there. And then he played a lot more from weeks 15 to 18 because the injury to Buchanan happened in week 15. So I can see your point. If you're saying weeks 1 and 2, he was playing a little bit more. I think that's true. They yeah. might have played rotationally with him, particularly in that Buffalo game.
Yeah, I just felt like he was – they really wanted him to secure that weak side linebacker spot. And I didn't think that, you know, based on how they treated that spot, even in the offseason, they kind of were banking on him being that guy and taking a step forward. I just don't think that they saw that. And he eventually kind of got phased out, obviously, until Buchanan got hurt.
Right. All right. Well, fair enough. Let's see. What else is there to say about this anymore? Weak side linebacker was really the role they're trying to fill this last year. This next year, there's actually a question of whether or not, you know, it's worth $7.3 million in cap savings to cut Roquan Smith. You know, Buchanan will be coming back from an injury. I think the chance of them cutting him is actually very low. But do you have a different feeling about that?
I think there's no way I would cut Roquan. Yeah. You know, he might be a little bit overpaid at this stage in his career. But I mean, who are you going to find? Basically, you'd be saying if we cut Roquan, you're saying that you can find somebody to replace him for 7.5, $7.2 million.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think there's anybody out there that you could replace that level of play, because he was still, I thought he still played at a very high level this year. He's undoubtedly one of the vocal leaders, not just on the team or not just on the defense, but on the team. So I just don't, and I definitely don't see enough from the other two inside linebackers to justify cutting such a good player at an important position.
That's right. There are people, and I've seen this online today, that think that Buchanan is 80% of the player at 20% of the cost. I'm not there yet.
Yeah, especially
And
after a torn ACL.
So I guess there will be real questions as to whether he's even ready for the beginning of the season. I'm sure that he'll work towards it, but there will be real questions about that. We had a few themes I thought that kind of ran through the inside linebacker position at a macro level if we do this. One of them was that Roquan is still being forced into more coverage roles and less pass rushing as part of this, but it's more coverage roles, whether it's early down or late downs. He's dropping deeper. And as a Ravens fan, we've seen this movie before with CJ Mosley. And Mosley is a guy who could do a lot of things for you well on a football field. But in an outstanding Ravens defense, he was a guy also who's picked on in coverage a little bit. And I think Roquan has got some of that, although I thought he had a very good year in coverage. I thought his drops deep were good. He had highlight plays. I mean, there was a lot to like about what he did. Good yards per target, that we'll get into a little bit later. But I thought that was one of the things we see is that they're asking Roquan to do more of the things that he's less good at because they don't have anyone else to do it.
That's exactly right. I mean, Roquan, I feel like he is very similar to CJ Mosley in how he gets treated by Ravens fans. They see a lot of times Roquan might, get got in coverage a little bit, but that's exactly right. What you said, it's because they put him in those positions because there's really nobody else and that they trust in that group to do so. And so I thought he was pretty good in coverage overall, just like I thought CJ Mosley was pretty consistent, pretty good in coverage, and allowed the Ravens defensive coordinators to do a lot of things and have a lot of versatility there.
Now, CJ was good about not expressing himself in a way like Patrick Queen or other players have when they've been with the Ravens in terms of really lashing back out at the fans when he hears things he doesn't like about his play. Who was the other guy? Actually, I want to say Tony Jefferson might have had some of this too in the beginning of
Oh,
his
yeah.
career, even though he's very good about being interacting with the fans and whatnot. Just it was got a little bit defensive at times. But the guy who I'm sorry, I was talking about Mosley. Yeah, Mosley did not really, indicate that he had rabbit ears very often. But after he got that interception, won the AFC North in 2018 on the effectively the final defensive snap of the season, he had something to say about, hey, maybe some of the people who think I'm lousy in coverage can take that kind of thing. As a it was something that Mosley was very drastically underrated as a coverage player anyway. Didn't have anyone really taking a big pass rush role with this Ravens team from inside linebacker. The Ravens did do more of a conservative pass rush, but they still had some, use of inside linebacker pass rushes, and it never really generated very much. Simpson had 2.5 sacks. Roquan had none for the first time in his career, and Buchanan might have had one. I don't remember for sure exactly how many he had.
Yeah, Simpson is a guy that I thought that they would do more with, especially because there was a lot of experience in college that he had with rushing the passer. He was used a lot as an outside linebacker, even like an edge rusher, essentially. And so I thought that there would be more of that featured in this defense. But I mean, again, that goes back to just trusting Trenton Simpson as a whole.
Simpson, a guy who also came from safety, so you would also figure there'd be more coverage in there, but that's never really developed at the NFL level. Buchanan did have half a sack, so they got 3 sacks out of their inside linebackers, which I would think would be in the certainly in the bottom half, maybe in the bottom quartile in the entire NFL if you're looking at inside linebackers. Did a lot of use of simulated pressure. I think that kind of hamstrung coverage at some times. So you line up with your linebackers in the A gap, they have to drop the coverage. It disadvantages them in terms of anything you want them to do in terms of closing windows from underneath or dragging a seam on a vertical route. And oftentimes, if you've got simulated pressure, or even if you know a team likes to use simulated pressure, you may have that in one of two calls that you can check to at the line of scrimmage. So it's not a You know, it's not an ideal situation from inside linebacker to be there. It probably helps the linemen get off and get a better chance on pass rushes, but it's not an ideal position for the linebacker.
How much, I wonder your opinion on this, how much freedom do you think the inside linebackers have to, you know, kind of basically do their own simulated pressure, like, you know, act like they're about to blitz and then drop back into coverage? How much freedom do you think they have to do that?
You know, that's a really interesting question. And I would have said in past coordinators, I would have thought, you know, like Martindale's trust of Mosley would have been at a very high level. I would have thought Pease's trust of Mosley, very high level kind of thing. But if I look at one other thing, I'd say it's possible they didn't have any trust at all this year. And the other thing is stunts. Because it's widely understood in the NFL that you're allowed to call stunts on field. And typically in on a lot of teams, or on past Ravens teams in particular, we've seen a lot of stunt activity. Some of it's a function of more mobility at the quarterback position now in the NFL. But when I see, you know, having two and three stunts in games, those are all being called from the sideline. It's too few for the players to not have called more twists at, you know, in terms of just, okay, I'm going to pick in this gap on this play. You run around me here and we'll see if we can generate value from that game. There's just, or is putting the kibosh on that, or did. I think if once you see that happening, then that you probably realize that they probably don't have that freedom with simulated pressure either, because sure, you're creating. Yeah. All right. Tackling good across the board. That was one thing this unit did well. So if you're looking at what Mike Santucci did, and Santucci is at the level where he's a possible retention by the team and the new regime. So he's going to have a big, whoever comes in and coaches this team is going to have a big job in terms of hiring new coaches. He's going to have to hire a defensive coordinator, offensive coordinator. He's going to want his own people. He may want different people for things you wouldn't even think of. Like, I'm really wondering, Daniel Stern is the head of, is director of football strategy. I'm wondering, does he stay around in something like this? Do they have other people who are assistant coaches at the positional level, though, whose jobs are maybe protected by the organization? So I don't think that Warhop would be protected, but if they had a really an offensive line coach who was, you know, 42 years old and they really liked him, they may, you know, they may get a, you got to work with this, you got to try and work with this guy for 1 year before you fire him, kind of a ruling, even though it's directly in the head coaching silo that decision would be made.
Yeah, I don't know about that practice. I just feel like you're kind of cornering yourself a little bit. Like, maybe some guys would be turned off by that if they're not able to to pick their own staff and they're basically forced to take on positional coaches. Like, I know that's kind of going on with the Browns right now. I don't know how much you've been keeping up with it, but they are essentially, I don't know about demanding, but they are strongly encouraging that the next guy keep Jim Schwartz on as defensive coordinator.
Really?
It's a massive thing to demand that a coordinator be, you know, picked for you essentially as a head coach. And so you're kind of backing yourself into a corner at that point. If you're the Browns, if you like them that much, just promote them at that point.
Or if you like the new guy so much that you're willing to fire your two-time coach of the year to get him, then go ahead and let him make the choice. And that is something I really appreciate about Bisciotti's running the organization, is that he doesn't reach down into the silos and make choices for people. So, you know, Mike Santucci could be a victim of this as well. Just somebody who ends up caught in the wash, and Jesse Minter has somebody else he likes, or whoever else comes in and coaches the team has somebody else they like to appoint to that role. All right, let's talk about the individual players right now. We just started off on some Roquan stuff, but he made his fourth consecutive Pro Bowl, for the first time in 4 years with the Ravens, he wasn't AP1. And we got to talking a little bit about the regression talk. Connor, you had some notes on him. Why don't you talk about, you know, give me some reasons why he didn't regress this year.
Yeah, I mean, Roquan was a lot better than people thought, or people gave him credit for. I thought, especially in coverage, I have as 6 yards even per target on 67 targets, but I know you had a different number. So if you wanted to explain to the folks,
let's hit difference on that real quick, because PFF does something that's different. And I probably like the PFF targeting method better than the PFR targeting method, which is done by Sports Radar. But effectively, the difference in targets is going to be targets between level two and level three, where PFF will typically assign that target to the underneath defender when it's close. And so you end up with more targets getting assigned to an inside linebacker in PFF and more getting assigned to safeties in PFR. And so I think the difference was not all that much. And the difference in yards per target, though, was significant. It was 7.2 yards per target versus 6.0. So both numbers are good, by the way, for an inside linebacker. Mm-hmm. You'd take either of those. But there is a little bit of difference in methodology there.
Yeah, and well, just getting back to Roquan real quick, and I appreciate that clarification. So just get back to him. Again, I mean, that's like we just said, that's pretty good statistics and coverage for inside linebacker. And I think that goes back to he has a lot of responsibilities there. Oftentimes you'll see him on running backs or, you know, tough matchups with Ravens played some pretty good tight ends this year overall. I thought that in terms of just scheduling, like we saw a lot of really talented tight ends. You know, the Browns, Fannin played him both times, and he's really good. Bengals obviously have some really talented tight ends, Freiermuth in Washington. So, you know, he had some tough responsibilities, but I thought he played pretty well overall. He probably took a little step back in open field tackling. I thought that he would miss a lot of tackling in the open field, but he was a really good cleanup guy. So overall, I thought tackling was a plus. He might have lost a step in terms of just his speed, but again, I just wonder how much that goes back to the injury that he had. A hamstring injury, you just never know. It can be weird with guys, and it can really, pun not intended, it can really hamstring guys throughout the entire year, and it maybe never gets fully 100%. I thought Roquan overall had a good season, and he had some bad games. I think when it was bad, it was really bad. I didn't think he played good against the Bills. I didn't think he played good in the last game against Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
But then he had some really great games, like genuinely great games. The second game against the Bengals, I mentioned the first game against the Browns earlier. Like, I thought that he was really good when he was good.
Yeah, he was outstanding. He had two consecutive games late in the year, which are outstanding. The week two game against the Browns stands up there with the greatest games any inside linebackers ever played for the Ravens, including Ray Lewis. So I looked at his years as a tackler. He had an 8.4% missed tackle rate, which is right on par with his career rate. And by the way, Roquan Smith has never had a year where he's missed 10% of his tackles. The overall missed tackle rate for inside linebackers is something like 11%, but he's never had, might be 11.5. He's never had a year where he's had even 10% missed tackles. And he had 49 stops to 11 missed tackles. This is where he differs from Buchanan fairly significantly. He had a 4.5-to-1 relationship between stops and missed tackles. Now, the stops are defensive wins that occur. Now, you can get those in two significant ways. One is you jump in a hole and you get a tackle where the other team does not keep up with the sticks. So if you allow a 5-yard run, you might be perfectly clean on your tackle, but you haven't really won the down for your team. On first down in particular, because they got enough yards to be keeping up with the sticks. In Roquan's cases, I mean, he had high value stops on fourth down. And in particular, he's the one who got the fourth down stop against the Packers. That was one of the really big plays in that game. And every drive was at a real premium in terms of value in that game, because both teams were just moving at will on the other. So those stops were a very big deal. He has a lot of great downhill play, which I still think is kind of the heart and soul of his game in the passing game. That's all recognition. It's getting there. And then it's knowing where you want to keep your leverage so you don't miss in the open field. Most of the time you're just reacting to the running back, turning his hips upfield, and he doesn't have the opportunity to juke you as easily. Roquan is less likely to get caught in bad situations there than either of the other two younger weak side linebackers the Ravens have.
Yeah, no, just to kind of, you know, finish up, am I wrong that this is the first time that Roquan hadn't been an All-Pro?
He'd been All-Pro one, three straight years.
I mean, that's incredible. And so with his age, it's he's bound to not be that guy, you know, probably any longer. But I mean, you're still talking about a guy that was playing at a really high level this year, and so I felt like he was getting a lot of hate, and he was definitely not the issue, I thought, with this defense.
Yeah, it's interesting that Roquan is one of the guys who really went out and defended Orr and said, you know, it's not about Zach Orr. It's you know, the players on the field. The calls are fine. We're just not executing these things. And it's interesting that he yeah, that's the way he chooses to do it. And I think most of the Ravens stars are pretty good at the microphone now in terms of not blaming things on coaches. But I've always been very impressed with him.
Yeah, and I just, you know, I have my own opinion about Zach Orr too. I mean, not to go off on him and get on a tangent about Zach Orr, but I thought he was right there with Roquan that he took a little bit too much heat from Ravens fans. He was kind of dealt a difficult hand. You know, he lost one of the best defensive linemen in football early on in the year, and had to adjust to that. So I just feel like he took a little bit too much heat after having a pretty successful end of the year in 2024.
Yeah, that's I think that's fair entirely. And he made so many adjustments in 25 that I thought were good. I mean, just trying to make the lemonade out of lemons he did on that defensive line, playing with four nose tackles active in some of the games out of five players. I mean, that's very unusual. It's absurdly unusual in some ways. But Travis Jones, very fortunately, was able to kind of play an effective three tech, and they had some other guys come in who could play some effective three, and Urban played a little bit of effective uncovered end in some games. So made up for some real weaknesses at not only on the defensive line, but also at outside linebacker. Then there's the loss of there's the never have, let's put it that way, of darn, why am I forgetting his name? The Green Bay defensive cornerback who came here and
Oh, Alexander.
Jair Alexander. And you know, he was never the guy that he was supposed to be. And it was nice to see Awuzie step up with as good a year as he had. And boy, was it necessary, because the Ravens really had otherwise a very big shortage of corner.
Marlon taking a step back too.
And then you know, they didn't have Ardarius Washington, of course, which is a big difficult thing to deal with from 24. When he came back, I thought he played reasonably well. I still think I hope the Ravens will re-sign him in 26. I don't think it's a given, but I hope he's a player, because I think he's extremely versatile and will help them out in that way. But you know, missing him for the whole year meant that they had to go out and make a bad trade effectively, to trade Oweh to get Gilman. And it might have still worked out for the Ravens in some way, because you got Hamilton into the really significant role that I think he's meant to play.
Well, I wonder how much Orr was a part of that trade, or at least you know, asking for it on a at a at an organizational level to be like, hey, you know, we need a guy like this. We need a back end guy so we can transition Hamilton kind of like we did last year, because our defense obviously isn't successful with the guys that we have. And so I just wonder how much Orr was a part of that trade in terms of maybe not Oweh straight up for Gilman, but just, hey, we need a back end guy.
Yeah, I think both can be true without him saying it's A for B in one particular trade. And I think what was probably true is the Ravens were ready to move on from Oweh and wanted to save the cap space. They were 1-5 or whatever the record was when they actually made the trade. They were in horrible shape, and so you know, they got the cap relief, and then they said, "Oh yeah, we'd like a safety out of this." And the Chargers said, "Sure, you can have Gilman." And Gilman obviously didn't do the job as a tackler for the Ravens, but was otherwise, you know, really valuable in terms of the ability to move Hamilton up front. And yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if Orr had input on that to say that. And they may have even, EDC may have come up with the trade after knowing both of these things were things that the team wanted to accomplish.
Right.
All right. So, you know, one question has come up is whether Roquan keeps the green dot going forward. He's had it, but Hamilton could have it if they wanted to play Roquan fewer snaps. I personally don't see any reason why I'd want Roquan off the field given the way he played this year. How do you feel about that?
I agree with you. Again, it goes back to, do you trust the guys behind them to to play inside linebacker, and I did not see enough from Buchanan, and I didn't see enough from Simpson to kind of take on that role. So I would prefer, if Roquan is healthy, that he plays 100% of the snaps that he possibly can at inside linebacker.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm with you entirely, and I think that they certainly, given the dollars involved, they'd be foolish not to do it. I don't expect them to cut him. Now, next year, it'll be a different story because there'd be $20 million due him in the last year of his contract, and that's money the Ravens can actually save in terms of the cap. And that, I think, I would expect him to be cut as it stands now, but it becomes then a different discussion of cut or extend would be the two options before the 27 season. They could even conceivably do that now, extend him, change the cap outflows by year a little bit. But it won't work. It won't work for the bonus money that's already been paid. That's, you know, they can't mute that money or mutate that money into different years. Yeah, and by the way, there's no void years on this deal currently.
No. Well, a lot of it, I mean, I'm sure the priority right now is obviously a coach, but then Lamar's restructure would be priority one after you get a coach. So kind of all things start with there. And then I don't know about a Roquan extension or anything like that. I think they probably want to see how he plays next year. And then after that, maybe.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's they have that option certainly in terms of the 26 season and then making the decision after that. All right, let's move on and talk about Teddy Buchanan, drafted in round four out of Cal. A kind of a moderate surprise that they picked him, I thought. You know, other people are in, you know, other people had him on the radar, which was nice. But he played 4 years at UC Davis and then 1 year at Cal. And, you know, the Pac-10 has kind of lost its status. They're now in really group of five level play at Cal in particular. And at UC Davis, obviously, he's a level down from there. But he was an outstanding college tackler, ended up playing 652 snaps for the Ravens on defense, another 237 on special teams, spread among five units. So a very central figure for this Ravens team who played, you know, not as many snaps as Roquan did, but he played a lot.
Yeah. And I mean, I loved it as a fourth round pick. That's honestly, that's about as good of a rookie year as you could hope for from a fourth round pick inside linebacker.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, and adventure is the focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough, can make you feel overwhelmed, and can make you count down the minutes until the kids are back in school. I know I look forward to summer as a time to take a break, but as a self-employed person, time spent away from my work is time I stress over wasting. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp is a quality therapist who work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S., BetterHelp does the initial therapist matching for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12 plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right on the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session, based on 1.7 million client reviews. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support and therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
You know, I really thought he was impressive as a tackler. I loved his ability as a tackler, which honestly, I wonder, I feel like that's something as an inside linebacker that guys usually have to develop more. That's a skill that guys usually have to develop more. So it was very encouraging to see him and his ability as a tackler.
Yeah, he'd been a good tackler always in college, and he came to the Ravens, and he's not a whole lot different from Roquan in terms of his missed tackle rate, which is really outstanding for a rookie. And I'll shortcut this discussion just a very little bit, and we can still talk through all the elements of this. But I'm going to say some bad things about Teddy Buchanan over, you know, in terms of the rest of this discussion, but I want to make clear that he came into the league in 2025 at a far higher level than Patrick Queen did in 2020 as a first round pick. Far higher level. I mean, it's not even comparable. And it took Patrick Queen probably until his third year to get to approximately where Teddy Buchanan is today.
Yeah, it's actually funny you mentioned Patrick Queen, because my next door neighbor is a big time Steelers fan. Mm-hmm. And one of the things he told me this year was, "Oh man, thank you guys for Patrick Queen." And I was like, are you being serious? I said, "Thank you for what?" I was like, "Thank you for taking him off
our hands." Well, I mean, I think there is a real question. They might cut Patrick Queen. They have a fairly team-friendly deal, but he's in the third year of a three-year deal. They either have to kind of extend him or cut him, kind of thing. So it'll be fun. We're recording this right before the game tonight, where the Steelers will have their playoff streak on the line. So we'll see what happens with Queen tonight.
Would you be, let me ask this as a question, would you be opposed if Patrick Queen gets cut, if the price is right, maybe bringing him in on a one-year deal, or maybe a, you know, 1 year with a two-year, like essentially you can cut him and be nothing to play weak side linebacker next year if the price is right for the Ravens?
So I'll boil that question down to, is there some price that I'd want Patrick Queen back at? Probably. But if you've got Buchanan and Simpson both there, who are year one and year three players they just got out of, so they'll be 2 and 4 next year. Mm-hmm. And Queen, you don't own any part of his future. I can't see a reason to do it. Yeah. I mean, I can't. I think already, you know, I feel like Buchanan was 80% of the player, certainly, and I don't think you'd get Queen for anything better than, you know, 500% of the same price. So I can't see a reason to bring him back. Yeah.
I'm with you. And I thought he was really bad this year too. So
yeah. Yeah. All right. So Buchanan allowed 6.6 yards per target in 41 targets. That was better than Roquan, better than the 7.2 for Roquan. So I'm using the PFF numbers in both these cases. By the way, you might get a lower number on PFR. You might be closer to 6. But he wasn't on the field for many third downs. In the beginning of the year, he was out on third downs in the dime package. And then as the year went on, he either was hurt or remained out as they moved to a lot more dime. So I'm not seeing a reason why I would look at those two numbers for Roquan and Buchanan and say, oh yeah, those are similar. I think it's a lot of usage basis. It's almost like looking at a free safety versus a strong safety yards per target numbers. You'd expect there to be a built-in amount different because they're asking more of Roquan, and more of what Buchanan is doing is downhill coverage where he needs to diagnose, he needs to get there quickly, he needs to make the tackle, but it's a lot of extension of the run game type stuff where it's fairly easy to get, you know, 4 to 6 yards per target on a significant number of your targets.
Yeah. So PFR has them at 6.4 yards per target.
Okay, so a little better, not too much difference.
Yeah. And I agree with you completely. I think they're probably an adjustment to his responsibilities compared to Roquan's.
That would be an interesting problem to try and solve, is to try and figure out like usage by inside linebacker, and the PFF people have probably good information on that would allow them to come up with some metric for that. It seems like, unfortunately, they're doing less and less things about football these days and more things about gambling, which it doesn't even make any sense relative to the changes in gambling laws in the United States, but it really is a disappointment to people who are looking to them for football analysis.
Yeah. Well, going back to that adjustment period or adjustment, you know, statistic, I've always thought the same thing about cornerbacks too, because oftentimes, mm-hmm. you know, the Ravens don't do this, but we don't follow a number one receiver with guys, but a lot of teams do. And so you almost wonder if they should have an adjustment for a number one receiver. You know, if a guy's covering Jamar Chase, versus, you know, somebody else.
Yeah. And if you play fixed sides, you might end up getting that just because the other teams knows you're vulnerable. You have Brandon Stevens. They want to put a big body, you know, receiver. Maybe T. Higgins is an ideal matchup against Stevens because he doesn't get his head around or whatever. But yeah, you definitely could be picked on that way too. But I agree. If you're following the number one, that generally is the worst thing. Getting back to Buchanan for a second, 23 stops and 8 missed tackles, just a 2.9-1 relationship. And that's one of the central differences between him and Roquan. And it's one of the reasons why I don't think he's ready to step up and be the lead guy in run defense, the initial gap shooter, the get to the point of attack first guy. I don't think he's ready for that kind of a role. And he would have to improve that number specifically before I thought he was good. And you know what? The problem is his missed tackle number is just fine. The problem is he's not getting to the spot and making plays, which means it's a diagnosis issue more likely in his case.
I was thinking the same thing. It's definitely something that I saw with him. It was almost like he would play kind of hesitant, which again, that's kind of expected as a rookie. He would be a little bit too hesitant. He would kind of get caught up in some traffic at times when he probably shouldn't have. And again, that goes back to him just being a rookie. You kind of expect those things. I do think it's definitely a diagnosis thing, which it really is. It sucks that he's not going to be able to have a full off season with the ACL. Because I really do feel like that would be something that they would attack in the off season.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, if he wasn't used as a spy too often because he wasn't in on third down too often. But if he gets back on the field more at third down, that is something a new coordinator could use him more, I think, as a spy or a late pass rusher. And one of the things you see underneath is you'll see the two inside zone defenders, and you're often in some sort of man concept on third down anyway, particularly if it's third medium. But when you're in third down and you allocate your weak side linebacker, but don't use him as a pass rusher, use him as a spy, mirror a mobile quarterback. I think that's something Buchanan could be good at. Something Simpson was good at this year. I thought that was one place where they got really good usage of him. The best play, Simpson's best play, maybe of the whole season, was taking down Malik Willis on the 1 yard scramble on third down that forced a field goal out of that. That is a 4-point play from Simpson on that, because that looked like it was going to be a touchdown, or it was going to be first down anyway, but it looked like it was probably going to be a touchdown on that play.
Yeah, I think that part of it in terms of spy responsibilities, Simpson is kind of your prototypical like guy that you would want to be a spy on a quarterback. And so usually when that was a responsibility put on somebody, Simpson would be the guy. But I didn't feel like Orr used a lot of spy, like even against Malik Willis, which I thought was an obvious quarterback, mm-hmm. you would want to have a lot of spies played against. We didn't really play a lot of spy that game, and that was questionable to me. But Simpson was the guy if we ever did that.
Yeah, there were a lot more guys during the year that they could have done it against. You know, Drake May is a guy you can legitimately do it, and they certainly could do it against Josh Allen and others. So yeah, the options were there. All right, we talked about the relativity to him and Patrick Queen. Looking at Buchanan's runway again, it's not that I'm saying he'll never be ready to move to Mike. All I'm saying, he's not ready in year two. So this will be an opportunity. It'll be a growth year for him to hopefully elevate his play to a point where they're comfortable moving off of Roquan after 26. And it's still a lot of ladder rungs up to get there.
Yeah, his development is going to be key for the Ravens just going forward to be able to move off of Roquan, to not invest heavily into, you know, using draft capital or using, any of the cap on an inside linebacker like they have with the Roquan right now. So that'll be definitely something to keep an eye on.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we're both in agreement that he stays at the weak side linebacker in 26, right?
Yes, I think so. As long as he recovers well from the ACL, which, you know, those can complicate things. I mean, I didn't think that, like, Keaton Mitchell, I know his was a little bit more traumatic, but, he didn't come back exactly the same. So you just never know about those things. But as long as he comes back and is the same guy, then, yeah, I think so.
All right. All right, let's talk a little bit about Trenton Simpson. He was the weak side linebacker starter in 24, lost his job in stages, as we talked about before. That was kind of the intro to the show. But he played better, actually, I thought, in a very limited role in 25. He's limited in a lot of ways, but one thing that's very clear on the Ravens really don't trust him in coverage. And you see them going to the dime on 2nd and 6, 7 and 7. And I'm like, you know, this is just not the same treatment as they use for Buchanan, where those would not be considered passing down, so to speak. And, you know, they wouldn't have the dime in at that point for him. But, you know, it is what it is. But I think his coverage statistics in particular are definitely have the taint of usage on them.
Yeah. And again, that goes back to kind of the adjustment thing with in terms of just the responsibilities that he had as a coverage linebacker. But I just didn't feel like he took that step forward in coverage that I thought that he would after last year, because there were some signs last year that he was going to be, you know, able to secure that weak side linebacker spot and that he was going to be better in coverage. And I just didn't feel like I felt like he was probably the same guy this year that he was last year.
Yeah, I'll tell you one big difference for me was he came to camp and he was just in remarkable physical shape. He looked a lot bigger. And I thought, okay, he's ready to stand up to the rigors of being an every down Will. So let's see if he can get his head in the game and really become the better player, you know, cerebrally, diagnosis, all that kind of things. And I don't think he was terrible in that regard. I think his role was really limited. A lot of his coverage is definitely on the extension of the run game kind of snaps. He did a pretty good job, diagnosing those and getting there. And down the stretch when he had to replace Buchanan, he was really good in coverage, only 4.4 yards per target, 5.1 for the year. But those numbers are, you know, they're all significantly better than either Buchanan or Roquan. Roquan has a lot more downfield responsibilities, a lot more of the between level two and level three stuff is his to drop and try and obstruct. I just never felt like that was the case with Simpson. They used him more closer to the line of scrimmage, mirror a mobile quarterback, try and keep him there and get spy value out of him. So while I think I'm actually pretty happy with the season he delivered. I wasn't really expecting him to retake the weak side linebacker role he lost in 2024. And you know, the way it worked out, Buchanan appears to be the incumbent now, but I don't feel like Trenton Simpson is a bad backup at this point. So I they have him for this year. And unfortunately, this is likely to be his last year as a Raven, I would think. He's not signed. He's certainly not a priority signing. He's not a guy they can afford to allocate any significant amount of cap to for your third linebacker. Even one who's pretty good on special teams, I don't think you can make that choice. His best chance to stay with the team may be another survivor route that we saw, you know, from Malik Harris and we've seen from others, where he comes back for a fifth year, gets some of that veteran VSB money. If Patrick Ricard isn't still getting it, you know, at that point. And then he can earn $2.5 million, say, for a 1 year deal as a valuable special teams player.
I was just thinking the same thing about sort of a similar Malik Harrison situation would be the only way that I would bring him back. But I do think that Simpson played his best ball later in the year when Buchanan went down. I think those were probably his best stretch of games, maybe ever as a Raven. And so that was encouraging to see. But I do think, you know, I don't know how you feel about this, but just based on how they treated the offseason with this spot in particular, you know, really the only investment that they put into it was Teddy Buchanan. And then you could say Hummel, but he was more of a special teams guy. I felt like they expected Trenton to kind of retake that weak side linebacker role.
If they really expected their fourth round draft pick to jump in and immediately have the weak side linebacker role, that was very optimistic thinking. Yeah. So you're probably right in that sense. And they didn't start it off so that one guy had their role entirely. But if you look particularly at that Buffalo game where they had, you know, Simpson had 26 snaps in that game, but I don't feel like his status with the Ravens is up in the air at this moment. Let's put it that way. I think it's more clear. We know more about who he is after three seasons. We still don't know everything we know about Buchanan. He's got a lot of runway left. Whereas Simpson, he's entering his fourth year and he could certainly take a step forward, in which case he's almost certainly lost, or he could take a step backwards, in which case there might be circumstances where the Ravens would want him back on some sort of special teams basis. And special teams, or he could take a step sideways, and maybe somebody wants him, maybe they don't. And you know, his strengths and weaknesses get offset, and the Ravens are still in the picture somehow. All right, let's move on and talk about Jake Hummel here. Only played 34 snaps at inside linebacker. He did carve himself out a strange role because 28 of his 34 snaps came against the Chiefs in week four after he came in as an injury replacement. And he also played six snaps, though, of goal line will. So that was a role that used to be Ed Sutter's role. If you're a 30-year Ravens fan now, the 1996 season featured the play of Ed Sutter, who had four consecutive stops at the one-yard line for a gain of zero of an opposing running back. And that was all the plays he played in that period. And it was over a course of two different weeks. The second guy he stopped three straight games was in the Rams game. He stopped Phillips, who was the guy they almost drafted over Jonathan Ogden with the fourth pick. So that was a really remarkable little intersection of Ravens history that occurred during this game. But Ed Sutter had that goal line will roll. And there have been other guys who've had that, by the way, for the Ravens in the past. Oftentimes they'll take out, you know, more of a mobile inside linebacker from that second spot and stick in a kind of a bigger special teams thumper in that will spot. All right. So obviously most of Hummel's contributions are on special teams. And by the way, that shouldn't be lost on Buchanan or Simpson. I don't think we talked about it on either of them, but they had 236 and 237 snaps respectively. And they were both good special teams performers. You can't afford to be without them. Hummel was outstanding though on 371 snaps, played across five units, had 14 tackles and three misses. And I know a lot of people know this, but maybe not everybody, is that special teams missed tackle rates are much higher than defensive missed tackle rates. So an 11.5% missed tackle rate, while that might be a median kind of a number for an inside linebacker, would be incredible for a special teams player. So they got real value out of that. Keandre Jackson also, and he were both among the best special teams players in the entire league.
Yeah, honestly, got pretty good play from special teams. And Hummel, I was thinking, had a chance to possibly compete for that will linebacker spot. And I guess it just didn't work out, but I was really excited about the signing. I was like, oh man, this could be one of those, you know, cheap veteran signings that DaCosta gets and it kind of has it kind of similar to, who was the guy? Josh Bynes, yeah, a few years ago, you know, just really cheap veteran guy that was able to come in there and play pretty well. And I was thinking, oh man, that could be a guy that fits that role. And I guess it just didn't work out, but yes, he was outstanding in special teams, which is kind of what they brought him in to do basically. Yeah. And just touching on, you know, Buchanan and Trenton on special teams real quickly. I thought they were great. And Buchanan especially, I thought he was really good. And unfortunately, he actually got hurt on a punt coverage snap. Am I
correct? I think that's right.
Yeah. Okay. So that was tough to see. You know, you never want to see a defensive starter get hurt on special teams, but it's part of 53-man roster and it's just part of it. So,
yeah. So you need to have special teams bigs, and they only really come from a few positions. They come from inside linebacker, outside linebacker, tight end are the big three. And if you think about it, you need your long snapper plus four other offensive linemen when you're punting the football away to block off some of the bigger guys that your opponent will rush at you with to try and block punts. And there's no real option to not having those four special teams bigs. And those guys also ideally would be fast enough to play down the field and cover kicks and you know, be core four unit special teamers. And in these three cases, they all were. So they got a lot of value out of that group, but they did have to do some replacement towards the end. And that's why we saw Chandler Martin and William Kwenku and Carl Jones, who all got a little bit of time at inside linebacker. Actually, Martin didn't play any snaps at inside linebacker, but the other two did. Come in and play at the end of the year because they just didn't have enough big bodies for that particular punting role. Hummel's a guy, where are you on re-signing him? Because he's a free agent. This is his fourth year in the NFL. He's just been through. Do you see him getting an Anthony Levine type contract, maybe a two-year deal at a slight premium to the to the vet minimum, or do you think he's more than likely will be gone and lead somebody else's special teams unit in 26?
You know, if I'm okay with bringing him back, I think it would be pretty inexpensive. But I could also definitely see somebody else valuing that a little bit higher than the Ravens do. Especially you just never know with the new regime. Obviously Harbaugh was a special teams guy, really valued special teams highly, wanted to invest, you know, I'm sure preached that with DaCosta and wanted to invest highly into special teams. You just never know about the new guy and what they're going to value.
Yeah. I don't ever really think it was a lot of money ever. And it would surprise me if DaCosta, at least now, does not see the value in it. I mean, he's been around the Ravens special team units for the entire Harbaugh era. So he probably has, you know, is at least on board with those valuations. In some cases, since he sets the price, you know, he has to be. Even if Harbaugh loves it and he thinks I'm not doing this, this is ridiculous. You know, you're hamstringing me to take $2.5 million that I would otherwise spend on other players and spending on special teams guys. I don't even like the roster spots. I don't even like the activations you do, but I live with them. But I'm not gonna feed you with some larger. He could have been that way, but it doesn't seem like he is. And I think they must be on the same page with it. So it's probably something we'll see with the next regime. All right, we're going to only briefly touch on the other guys. Jay Higgins got the most play of anybody. He was a preseason standout, made the 53 right out of camp, which was one of the really big surprises. He was one of three UDFAs along with Lowry and Martin who made the team. And he played well on special teams, which was good. And he was active for 11 games. And again, he's one of the bigs that they needed. End of the season, he finally got 7 snaps that he got to play on defense, which was pretty cool. I don't know if you've seen his father being very proud on Twitter from time to time.
I have seen that, yes. Yeah.
Being an NFL parent, it's just got to make people very, very proud. But obviously, he's obviously very, very proud of his son. And Higgins is a guy who did not test well at all in terms of what he did, but I think he plays a lot faster than he is. And that's a very good thing. It looked great in this preseason, and it looked like he belonged certainly during the season. So he did get injured. He did a stint on IR, then he came back. And that was, you know, it's a very big deal to have him for 11 games this last year. He will be entering year 2. Chandler Martin, on the other hand, another guy played very well right next to him in the preseason. Will, I believe, still be in year 1 because he's had 3 practice squad elevations, but he hasn't had any other games with the team. So I don't believe his year odometer clicks over to year 2. But he's a guy who also played very well during the preseason and had 34 special team snaps. Never got in on defense, but he was in for effectively 2 games. I think he got hurt on the first snap of the 3rd game that he played. William Kwenku, another guy, oddball situation here. William Kwenku is from Cameroon, and I think it'd be fair to say he wouldn't have a role in the NFL if it weren't for the IPPP program. But after Okoye got elevated, then Kwenku became a guy who was eligible for the IPPP practice squad spot. There is not a roster spot for an IPPP guy, so you're still going to get 53, and there's not a 90-man spot for the IPPP guy, but there is a 17th practice squad spot if you want to carry one. And so Kwenku is 29 years old, folks. If you didn't know this, he played his first NFL snap right at the end of the season, and he gave up a touchdown pass actually on a goal line snap where they kind of had a play action fake on it. And he ended up getting caught out in no man's land between rushing the quarterback and going after him. So, you know, in some ways, very uncomfortable position to be in your first NFL snap, but it's also a remarkable amount of persistence to show to stick around with your NFL dream until age 29.
Yeah, honestly, it's a great story. And you feel bad for him because it's like, you know, do you really want to show that to your friends and family that it's like, here's my one NFL snap.
Yep. And you know what, they can't all end like Ted Williams and Ray Lewis did. Ray Lewis is, you know, his last defensive snap is 4th and goal from the 5-yard line, and he made a significant contribution to let LRB come free on that. And they can't all have a first snap like Jameel McClain did. He sacked Jamarcus Russell in the end zone for a safety on his first NFL snap. But this, the other side of it is this, that, you know, your one NFL snap, you get caught in no man's land and really probably unfairly blamed for that touchdown when it
it's an impossible situation. I mean, I thought he chose right, honestly. I mean, it's one of those things.
Yeah. You just hope the quarterback doesn't throw the ball accurately in that case. Last guy we have to talk about is Carl Jones. Carl Jones came in, cast off of the Bears, who played some significant special teams for them, and they liked him in that role. They brought him in as a special teams big at the end of the year. He did also play one snap on defense, but nothing worth talking about, honestly. And Jones had to be put on the 53, though. I think the reason was they took him off the Bears practice squad and they had to put him on the 53. But it might have been they picked him up after the Bears released him from the end of their practice squad. And then they kept him on the 53, thinking he might be taken away. And that was always something Voss and I were talking about week after week, was whether or not it made any sense for the Ravens to be carrying both David Ajabo and Carl Jones, who are kind of both inert to the team in terms of their game day usage. All right, let's get back to 2026 needs here for a minute. I think we talked to death the amount of picking up Roquan's contract. There's not any real option on this. They actually kind of have to decide by March, or the $7.3 million savings gets cut to $3.3 million. So they won't know the draft situation is the point I'm making there, in terms of whether or not they could somehow draft somebody to replace Roquan. But I don't think their draft capital situation would allow for them to use a top pick on a inside linebacker this year.
Yeah. And I, you know, I'm kind of torn on that. I don't think that I would invest a top draft pick, at least this year. But if it's one of those things where Roquan doesn't, maybe he takes another small step back next year, and then Buchanan doesn't look the same, maybe then you consider it as like a sort of a Roquan successor. So I don't think that I'm in the camp to invest a high draft pick into an inside linebacker this year, but I could see them doing it.
Okay. All right. I would say no draft pick at inside linebacker. That would be my position on the matter. I think they might bring in another UDFA that they like. They had tremendous success, and they really have some guys to choose from in terms of Higgins and Martin, who might still be useful pro players. And then they might add another guy. And I'm thinking back to the times when they've had, you know, Ellerby and McClain and Bart Scott on the team. Bart Scott was already an established player. Actually, Bart Scott was gone by the time I think that McClain actually. No, they were both there in 2008, for example. But there were times when those guys, you know, that was a lot of UDFAs together on the roster. I think it's possible they might just go the UDFA route. They need every one of those draft picks to fill holes across this roster. And they're fortunate at a few positions, offensive tackle and inside linebacker being two of them, that they're not forced into making a draft pick at either of those positions. And I think they need to take the opportunity probably to not do it where they have a choice.
Yeah, the roster situation is going to be interesting. There's a lot more holes in this roster this year than I thought there were to start it, for sure. And then obviously, you know, Matabike, the whole thing with him, it just complicates things a little bit, unfortunately. So, unfortunately for both sides. I'm very curious to see how DaCosta is going to handle this offseason.
We talked about extending Hummel. I don't think we need to hit on that anymore. And then the development is going to be the biggest thing. Simpson, Buchanan, I think Higgins is really the third key guy to see if they can really get him some snaps in year two. There probably will come opportunities. There certainly did this year. And Higgins is a guy who forces his way onto the roster for his special teams value. So he's always around if you want to get him in at the end of a ball game for mop-up duty. And hopefully, not on the wrong side of this, the Ravens have some more mop-up opportunities than they did this year where it wasn't much at all.
Yeah, I think that for sure on the development of those guys, and I'm probably in the camp of just either UDFA or go get a, you know, maybe a vet off the street. Similar, I just keep thinking back to Josh Vines and how valuable he was. And was it 2022 or 2021?
Well, 19, and then again in 21, they brought him in.
That's right. So somebody like that would be huge, and it would give me a lot more comfort in case Roquan went down because, you know, I just think back, I rewatched the Texans games for some reason earlier this year. I guess I just like to torture myself, but
yeah,
it was, Simpson was really bad that game. Teddy was not great either early in the season. So that would make me feel a little bit better about things.
All right. It's been great talking football with you. Outstanding discussion here. And I think hopefully this is a position where, you know, the Ravens certainly have to hope for some things to go right. But I don't think they have a lot of big decisions to make at the inside linebacker position, which is kind of nice, actually. But Connor, tell folks if they have a question about football, they want to talk to you about it, where should they reach you?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter, X, at Connor_Brooks14.
14, not 410. 14.
14.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Outstanding. Other folks out there, please make use of hashtag film study mailbag. If you want me to make a 1 to 3 minute video, I might do that. I might put a question on a show. And I've had some problems with people sending me questions as DMs. It's always better if you just put this out in regular Twitter in the ether there. I'll pick it up there and it'll go into the proper column on my tweet deck if you want to know the actual way this works. And then I'd be able to pick it out and put it in the appropriate show. But a question can get lost if you send it to me in an email. And I realize some people don't have any option because you're on Reddit or whatever. Then it's okay. Just send it to me there, or use hashtag film study mailbag on Reddit and I'll search Reddit for it if you want to try that. So anyway, really appreciate all you folks. Connor, thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, thank you. It was a pleasure.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study. Thank you.